This is Larry Jones. You are listening to the Grace and Glory Hour with Pastor David M. Atkinson. Thank you for joining us today. We appreciate your interest and request that you pray for this ministry. Our email address is graceglory7@juno.com. graceglory7@juno.com. Now here is Pastor Atkinson.
1 Kings chapter 1, verse 5. Then Adonijah, one of the sons of King David, to one of his numerous wives. We observed this morning that the problem of polygamy is just oozing out of the chronicles of the life of King David. So Adonijah, one of King David's sons, to one of his wives. He's the son of Haggith. And the record is that Adonijah exalted himself, saying, "I will be king." David was very old, and it was time for a clear establishment of the matter of succession to the throne of Israel. And Adonijah jumped into what seems to have been something of a vacuum. And he said, "I will be king." And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. It was supposed to be a show of strength, and it was supposed to pull everyone along with the show of strength. Now, please look at this inspired observation. What a commentary verse 6 is. "And his father, King David, had not displeased him at any time in saying, 'Why hast thou done so?'" Verse 11, "Wherefore Nathan spake unto Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon." The prophet, the preacher, steps into the vacuum and the crisis, and the prophet goes to Bathsheba, the mother of Solomon. And Nathan said, "Hast thou not heard that Adonijah, the son of Haggith, doth reign? And David, our Lord," small letters, "David, our Lord, our master, our king, knoweth it not?" Our text, as I said this morning, is 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 6, sections A and B. "And David understood, and David, his father, had not displeased him at any time." Let me just say at the outset, I don't know a father who likes to displease his children. I never enjoyed displeasing our two. But I would submit that if a man is a good father, and if the child lives for any length of time, sooner or later, the father will displease the child if he's a good father. Now, we all want to be liked. But David had not displeased Adonijah at any time because he wanted to be liked. And you see that with David over and over again. And I don't hold a candle to King David. What a great man he was after the heart of God. But the record indicates that David was not perfect. And he held back from displeasing Adonijah because he wanted his boy to like him. Our subject is mistakes fathers make. Mistakes fathers make. Preached by a father who has made many of them. Mistakes fathers make. Preached by a father who has made many of them. We began in the previous message by observing that King David's disengagement, his detachment, his default as described by the prophet Nathan in 1 Kings chapter 1, verse 11, where we see that David was clearly out of the loop. We saw that this detachment, we saw that this disengagement, this default was a mistake that led to disastrous consequences in the kingdom. It was an omission. Oh, but it was an omission with calamitous consequences. We also looked at the question, when does a dad default? When does a dad default? Now, this evening, let's move on to consider a second question. What must a dad do to keep from defaulting? What must a dad do to keep from defaulting? Let me make it very plain at this point. We will come back to what I'm going to touch on later on, time permitting, but I want to make it plain at the outset that I'm certainly not advocating child abuse. I hate child abuse. We have very detailed policies and procedures here in both the church and Sunday school ministry and in the academy ministry. We despise child abuse. And we have in place a series of policies and procedures that we implement whenever there's the slightest hint. We do. We implement it. So I hate child abuse. And I will help prepare the millstone for the neck of any father who abuses his child. Jesus said in Matthew 18:6, "Whoso shall offend one of these little ones which believe in me, it were better for him that a millstone were hanged about his neck and that he were drowned in the depths of the sea." Our Lord was opposed to child abuse, and you and I should be very definitively opposed to child abuse as well. And our ministries here need to be known as ministries that just don't pussyfoot around on these matters. Children are precious to the Lord, and they are a holy charge. But what I am saying in these messages is that a father who must not abuse must rather interfere. A father must interfere with his child's natural bent. Say the word with me. Interfere. Interfere. A father must interfere with his child's natural bent. A father must meddle with his child's natural inclinations. Proverbs 10, verse 5b says, "He that sleepeth in harvest is a son that causeth shame." Boys like to sleep. And so, fathers must meddle. Fathers must interfere. Just like my father meddled and interfered on the farm. Now, I didn't want to sleep. I was already in my journal writing poems and outlines. I didn't want to sleep, but I was upstairs in the bedroom on the second floor of the farmhouse writing in my journal. I didn't want to sleep, but I wanted to write poems and songs. And that was it. David, it's time to bring in the hay. Dad was bold enough to meddle in my life. Dad was bold enough and loving enough to interfere. And there was time to ride after the hay was brought in. And there was time to ride after the wheat was threshed. Dad interfered. He meddled with my natural inclination. A father must also interject the glory of God into the child's pursuit of the glory of self. The father must interject the glory of God into his child's pursuit of the glory of self. Every human being is born pursuing his or her own glory. And a father must insinuate himself and say, what we are all about is not first and foremost the glory and the agenda of self. We're all about the glory of God. A father must disrupt and derail his child's innate agenda of selfishness. What must the father do to avoid default and being disengaged in the life of his child? He must interfere. He must insinuate. He must interject the glory of God as the bottom line motive. And a father must see, intervene. A father must intervene as a roadblock to divert his child from the natural course of self-destruction. A father must intervene to divert his child from the natural course of self-destruction. So fathers, I plead with you, for the sake of the glory of God first, and then secondly, for the well-being of your child, and thirdly, for your own sanity, interfere with the natural bent of your child. Interfere. Go over here to Hoosier Sports and have a desk plate made for your little desk, or perhaps where you shave in the morning. I am the interferer of this house. I am the interferer of this house. It's part of my job description to interfere. And so that all of us, including the children under this roof, understand that we're about the glory of God, not the glory of self and the agenda of self. Be an interferer. You'll have to from time to time, or not a good father. Oh, you say, well, I'm sort of passive. Well, my beloved father was a Mennonite. But go ahead and ask the Lord to give you the backbone to interfere. I'm not a pacifist, but my father didn't let his pacifism interfere with the razor strap. Dad never let pacifism get in the way of the strap. Now, I can only recall twice when he used it. And that was enough. Dad was a wonderful teacher, and I learned to be a quick learner. You are number one interferer in your home if you are the father. That's your calling. So I plead with you, dads, interfere with the natural inclination of your child. Don't be a couch potato. Don't be passive. Interject yourself and a biblical agenda into the life of your child. Be lovingly, kindly, persistently assertive. Just a minute. Where are you going? Oh, just one more minute. Who will be driving? Oh, just a third minute. And who all will be in the car? When will you be home? Be lovingly, patiently assertive. Plug yourself in to the process. Nudge it. Impact it, influence it, and if you have to, poke it. That's what fathers are called to do. Keep on interjecting yourself into the life of your child until your child's wedding day. Now, you may want to stop interjecting yourself the night before the wedding. If you haven't succeeded by that point, just forget it. But keep interjecting yourself until your child's wedding day, and then say, so long for now. Mom and I love you. We'll be praying for you. We're here. If you need some loving, God bless you. I've done the best I could do. But keep interjecting until your child's wedding day. Well, let's come to a third question. How does a dad keep from defaulting? How does a dad keep from defaulting? A, correct your child early. Correct your child early. The Authorized Translation in Proverbs 13:24b is betimes. Correct your child betimes, which means diligently or conscientiously or early. Correct your child or children early, diligently, that is with attention and care, or conscientiously. Turn to Proverbs 19:18. Would you join me, please, in Proverbs 19:18? And let's read it in unison. Proverbs 19:18. The first word is chasten. Let's read it together. 19:18. Chasten thy son while there is hope, and let not thy soul spare for his cry. The plain implication is, there'll come a time, sooner than what we'd like, when the child will be beyond hope. Now, am I reading in? No, I'm not reading in. There is a clear implication. There will come a time when the child will be beyond hope. So, as the old commercial used to say, why wait for spring? Do it now. Chasten thy son while there is hope. In order to keep from defaulting, a father needs to correct his child early. Now, the emphasis in these messages this year is not on the rod. The emphasis is not on the rod, what we sometimes call corporal bodily discipline. We do not spank in our academy and never have. But having said that, the Bible does teach that in the privacy of the home, there may be times when some form of corporal discipline is necessary. There may be times in the privacy of the home where some form of corporal discipline is necessary. But we're to chasten our children betimes, early, diligently. Seize the moment for intervention in your child's life. The moment will quickly pass. Seize it. Don't wait for mañana. Seize the moment. Seize the opportune moment. A child is often like a red-hot horseshoe. Bend the horseshoe when you can, because the steel will not always be bendable. Seize the moment. Don't be so fearful of being thought hasty that you always procrastinate and let the moments pass. No matter how good your little darling is, he will need to be disciplined and redirected at some point. No matter how much she looks like a little angel, She'll need your assertive involvement when you seize the moment to help her become what she can be for the glory of God. You say, well, mine is 8 and I've never had to redirect. Oh, are you dreaming? What that indicates more than anything else is that you're proud of yourself. And you think that you're the first man in the world that fathered a non-sinner. You think you're the first man in the world or history that fathered a non-sinner. Wake up and smell the coffee. Or smell the stench of human depravity and interject yourself. Seize the moment. If you miss the opportunity for intervention, correction, and godly redirection, you are party to creating a destiny of hopelessness for the child. If you default, if you don't seize the moment, as I said, the time will come when hope will pass, and you're part of a destiny of hopelessness for that child. Yes, you are, and you'll be held responsible. Will answer for default. Have you heard of sins of omission? Well, default in a dad is a sin of omission. We'll answer for that. As well as we'll answer for the sins of commission. And then, as we continue to look at the question, how does a dad keep from defaulting? Be correct your child out of compassion and pity. Correct your child out of compassion and pity. Turn to Psalm 103. Psalm 103. Psalm 103. Let's read in unison verses 13 and 14. Psalm 103, verses 13 and 14. The first two words are like as. Together, please. Like as a father pitieth his children, so the Lord pitieth them that fear him. For he knoweth our frame. He remembereth that we are dust. As you're correcting, as you're disciplining, remember your own depravity. As you're correcting, remember your own depravity. Don't you just be pounding like some kind of superior dictator. Don't you be doing that. You discipline with pity, remembering that you too are a sinner and you too are dust. And but for the grace of God, the paddle would be applied to you then and there. If you are disciplining out of revenge, you are unscriptural and you are in sin. If you are disciplining out of revenge, you are unscriptural and you are in sin. When your child misbehaves, he or she is simply, now it's not very simple, but you know what I'm saying. When a child misbehaves, he is simply misbehaving out of his inborn nature. He's doing what depravity does. She is doing what humankind do and will continue to do if left to their own devices. So don't be shocked the first time he lies. Don't be shocked the first time they fight over a toy in the sandbox. Expect that. And don't let it sneak up on your blind side. Oh my. She lost her temper. Missy stamped her feet. Surprise, surprise. Expect it. Be ready for it. And if you're ready for it, you won't be disciplining on the fly and out of revenge. You prepared your heart and mind for it when you knew that you were with child. You prepared your heart and mind way back there. So it doesn't sneak up on your blind side, and you're ready, and you're going to lead in correction or discipline out of a sense of pity and love and remembering that you too are a sinner. And that He's a loving Heavenly Father. He's a loving Abba that disciplines you, and you are to administer discipline with a similar kind of love. Do not correct out of a heart of superiority or hatred. Correct out of a broken heart. Sir, I tell you in love, if you get some kind of glee out of administering corporal punishment, there's something wrong with you. It's a mandate from the Lord. But I don't see anything in Scripture that says a godly father, to use the popular term of our culture, is happy during the process. If you can do it with glee, there's surely something wrong with your mind. It ought to break your heart. Correct out of pity, because you care. See, correct verbally. Turn to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15. 5. Would you listen, please, as I read? Proverbs 15:5. A fool despiseth his father's instruction, but he that regardeth reproof is prudent. And now 7, verse 7. The lips of the wise disperse knowledge, but the heart of the foolish doeth not so. Unless the father is unable to speak, unless a father is physically unable to speak, it used to be called a condition of being mute. But unless a father is unable to speak, the instruction is going to be given verbally. And I know that because verse 7 talks about the lips. Correct your child verbally. Try not to raise your voice. The more grieved you are, the quieter you ought to speak. But you must give voice. You must give vocabulary. That's how human beings communicate. True? Words. You must give voice and words to the issue. And don't just say, well, you know, you're going to get it because you know. No, you have to verbalize it. Give instruction. Use your lips. Explain it. Talk about the family guideline, the biblical guideline. And I hope our family guidelines are biblical. Talk about the violation. And why it casts aspersions on the glory of God. Talk about it. Verbalize it. Use your lips. And then D, how does a dad keep from defaulting? Correct physically where it is necessary. Correct physically where it is necessary. Now turn back again to Proverbs 13:24. 13:24. We emphasized the second part of verse 24 a few moments ago. Now we're coming back to the first part of Proverbs 13:24, which says, "He that spareth his rod hateth his son." Discipline, according to both Old and New Testaments, is to be a badge of belonging and love. Whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth. Discipline, according to both Testaments, is to be a badge of belonging, legitimacy, and love. There's something about a child's heart that when the discipline is done scripturally and for the glory of God, the child very quickly learns, oh, that's the language of love. That's the language of love. Dad loves me enough to take the time for this. I can tell it grieved Dad. He loves me. If he be without chastisement, you are illegitimate. So don't be a couch potato and sit around in your super piety. Think, well, I would never touch him. Never touch her. That's phony. That's the cheap and easy cop-out. Bestow the badge of legitimacy and belonging once in a while when it is absolutely necessary. Especially when they're young. Where you have to, when it's warranted, use corporal punishment. Now, I've said before, and you may disagree with me, and that's fine. We would never part fellowship over this, but I will say that if you haven't largely won the battle by the time they're 12, it's my opinion. I can't find any airtight proof of this in the Word, except for the bar mitzvah age of the Jews. But if you haven't largely won the battle by the time they're 12, you are not going to beat them into submission. You're not going to beat them into submission. But when they're younger and when it's necessary, he that spareth his rod hateth his son. Strong language. There's a proper way to administer a spanking. The actual physical contact should be very brief. It is the prelude and the postlude that makes the corporal discipline effective. You need to spend due time on the prelude and due time in the postlude. You need to talk about it. And you need to talk about it until the child sees that you are brokenhearted. Don't be a phony. Children can see through two-facedness and hypocrisy so very fast. Talk about it before and after. I didn't plan to say it. It's not in the outline. And I hope I don't embarrass Pastor Lee, but both April and Lee would always find an excuse within the first half hour after they were corrected, whether it was a strong, firm, verbal correction or whether corporal, they'd always find an excuse within 30 minutes to come back in the house to see if we still love them. You know, it could have been 85 outside. I'm just giving you for instance. And they'd come in the door. I'm cold. Could have been just after lunch. I'm hungry. They wanted reassurance that they were loved. And that the discipline could not be misconstrued as a rejection. Look for them to come back. Pray for it. And so the actual time of the corporal discipline should not be long, but the prelude and the postlude should be thorough, specific, and it should be conversational, and they need to talk the whole situation back to you in their own language. Now, incorrigible rebels will not respond or turn even for a spanking. Incorrigible rebels, those who have their hearts and minds set on rebellion, won't respond or turn or change even for a spanking. And if a child sets out to be a fool, there are times when there's nothing a parent can do except weep in privacy. Now, if you have to use corporal discipline, don't swat in Walmart. Don't swat in a public place. Don't slap across the face or anywhere in a public place. How would you like to be swatted in a public place? And you don't win the battle by way of embarrassment. That's not the point. In the old days, they used to say that Papa had a woodshed. The woodshed wasn't Walmart. Oh, my. And that's all about the first mistake. Fathers make a mistake when they default, disengage, as David was disengaged, and didn't even know what was going on with Adonijah. Now, I'm just going to summarize the scriptures and be done. In 1 Samuel chapters 2 and 3, we read about Eli, and Papa Eli, who was the priest. And reports came to him regularly about his sons, his designated successors in the priesthood at the tabernacle, his sons behaving immorally, and his sons being lustful and greedy to get the meat, and his sons put their servants on the spot because the servants were told, "You get that meat for me even before it's properly cooked. I want it now." Those boys of Eli were lustful boys, totally given over to their G-U-T and fleshly lusts. And Eli, to abbreviate the story, said, "Nay, my sons, it's no good report I hear. Tut, tut, tut." The second mistake fathers make is they scold, but do not enforce. They scold, but do not enforce biblical standards and expectations. A Christian father needs to first communicate what the biblical expectations are and then to enforce them. And if a child comes to the place where he will not abide by the biblical rules of the household, then I guess he will have to go and live in one room above some garage. But here are the perimeters, and this is how we live in this house. I don't suggest you let him you then smoke pot upstairs. I don't suggest you let him shoot up in the basement. I don't suggest you let him watch porn in your home. These are the parameters. You're expected to comply. And if you insist on not complying, then I'm responsible for the activity that goes on under this roof. I love you, but here are the parameters, and I intend for it to be this way. Are you going to become party to boozing? If you let it go on under your roof, you are. You give the impression that you approve. Are you going to become party to a porn party? Draw lines, explain where they are, and then enforce. And often you will enforce with a broken heart, but enforce. I will not get too specific, but we have had parents who enforced with tears streaming down their faces. But you have no choice. If you're going to retain any credibility at all, the second mistake is when a father scolds but does not see that biblical expectations are met and implemented. I've got to quickly close, but we come up to the third mistake fathers make by at least trying to remember 2 Samuel chapter 14, 2 Samuel 14, verses 1 through 3, and 13 and 24. And now I'm back, coming at it again from the other direction. In 2 Samuel 14, David has had problems with another son, Absalom. And Absalom has been banished. He's been banished from the kingdom for 3 years. And someone who, it seems, is trying to help, puts an old wise woman up to making up a story and telling David this story so that David will invite Absalom back into the country of Israel. And so David says, all right, all right. He can come back to the country. He can come back within the boundaries of our nation, but he'll not see my face. He'll not see my face. A preacher that I often, in time past, enjoyed hearing. I've not heard him recently. That preacher called that putting your child in the suburbs of forgiveness. Putting your child in the suburbs of forgiveness. All right. You're partially forgiven, but you can't see my face. Come home, but don't come home all the way. Come back, but you'll not see my face. This is the third mistake, and I'll give it, and then I'll read something from a book and be done. Mistake number three, it is a mistake to indefinitely banish a disobedient child from your face, your presence. It is a mistake to indefinitely banish a disobedient child from your face, your presence. Now, I repeat it. You can forbid, disallow, or prohibit certain conduct under your roof, and you ought to. Did you hear what I said? You can forbid, you can disallow or prohibit certain conduct in your house while permitting the child to come back to talk to you. You never know what the child's being back in your presence would do inside his heart. You never know. Hetty Wesley was sister of John and Charles Wesley. Now we're talking about tall cotton when it comes to the history of Christianity, and we're talking about tall cotton when it comes to the history of revival, not only in Great Britain, but also North America. We're talking about the Wesley family. Hetty was the sister of John and Charles. Charles wrote some of the most wonderful doctrinal hymns that are ever sung. But Hetty Wesley was the rebel. Hetty Wesley ran with the wrong crowd, and she eventually eloped. Hetty's father, the Church of England rector, Samuel Wesley. I believe we have one hymn by Samuel Wesley in our hymn book. But the next time you see his name in hymn book, remember, he had godly sons, but he wasn't perfect. The same Samuel Wesley was a very austere, severe man. When Hetty ran off to get married, Samuel Wesley declared, "I never want to see your face again. This is a pastor. I never want to see your face again. You tell Hetty she is forbidden to ever set foot in this house again." As might be expected, the man Hetty married turned out to be a drunk. Just like Daddy predicted. Hetty had a very hard life. Most of the time with child. Sad, poor, her good-for-nothing husband drinking up the little income they had. And Hetty, in that dingy little apartment, trying to take care of a multiplicity of children all by herself. Hetty got sick young. When she was dying, she sent word to ask her father if she could come home just once more. Samuel Wesley said, "Absolutely not. She defied my wishes. She may not set foot in this house again." Samuel Wesley refused his dying daughter's last request to see his face. Samuel Wesley made a mistake. He banished Hetty indefinitely. Now, he would not have been approving of her husband's booze to let her come back and say goodbye. I've got so much, I'm so full. Here's a book. I was preaching in Georgia one time, and a woman who was a member here for several pleasant years, her husband went on to be a preacher, and I was preaching down there, and they heard that I was preaching, and they came, and she said, "Pastor, are you familiar with the book, Let Me Hold You Longer? Let Me Hold You Longer by Karen Kingsbury?" Now, Karen Kingsbury she's really quite well known for writing what some would call Christian fiction. I tend to prefer history and biography with facts and dates and that kind of thing. But this is a genius author. She's known for those books, novels, fictional stories, and she's very good at it, but I just tend to read history and biographies. But this little book, let me hold you longer. Let me see Karen Kingsbury's heart. And with this, I am done. Long ago, you came to me, a miracle of firsts. First smiles and teeth and baby steps, a sunbeam on the burst. But one day you will move away and leave to me your past. And I will be left thinking of a lifetime of your lasts. The last time that I held a bottle to your baby lips, the last time that I lifted you and held you on my hip, the last night when you woke up crying, needing to be walked, when last you crawled up with your blanket, wanting to be rocked, the last time when you ran to me, still small enough to hold, the last time that you said you'd marry me when you grew old. Precious simple moments and bright flashes from your past. Would I have held on longer if I'd known they were your last? And he will go. He will go sometime for the last time. Now, if you're blessed, sometime when he gets really big, maybe on Father's Day, maybe on Father's Day when he gets really big, he'll go like this. But there'll be that last time when he goes like this. Cherish the memories. Cherish the moments. And let's try to learn from the Bible about the mistakes that fathers can make.
We trust you have been encouraged or strengthened by the word today. We would love to hear from you. You can email us at graceglory7@juno.com. That's graceglory7@juno.com. We will reply to all those who contact us. And now, until next time, may the good Lord bless and keep you.